which each of these scenes, there's a climax with an end near. And our passage that we are coming to, where we're going to see in the next little bit in Mark, is the build-up to the climax, the part where Christ is on the cross and he dies and then he raises from the dead. But before that happens, there is something that is building, and we get to see it here today. The battle is starting. The gloves are off. The religious leaders are beginning to pummel Jesus, seeking to trap him so that they can kill him. It is Tuesday, Holy Week. Jesus enters Jerusalem, cleanses the temple, and now he's teaching openly in the courts. The religious leaders are livid with what he is doing. Their authority is being challenged. Their system is being exposed. Their influence is threatened. So they take a new tactic. Not an open challenge, but a calculated trap. They send delegations. This time it's the Pharisees, and they are deeply nationalistic and anti-Roman. And then you have the Herodians, who they support the Roman occupation, Herod's dynasty. These two groups do not normally get along. They are at odds with one another, but they've come together for a purpose, and that is to see if they can trap Jesus. They're going to take him down. Do you see the battle raging here? It is a battle that is going on. This is no casual question and answer session. Oh, Jesus, I got a question I've been pondering for some time. See if you can answer it for me. Oh, no. They are calculating to take him down. And they are working together to do so. This is warfare. So what we see here is that we live in this divided We live divided between the claims of the world and the claims of God's kingdom. But our ultimate allegiance is to the one whose image we bear. Yet knowing this, we struggle with that identity, do we not? So let's try to dissect a little bit of what's going on here. And I got three different movements that I want to look at. And the first is this. It is the trap. The trap. They purpose to trap Jesus, and Jesus takes their purpose and turns it into seeing the kingdom of God. What the enemy intends to entrap, God causes to reveal his kingdom. That's really what we see happening here. I know that oftentimes you can maybe hear a message on this and people say, well, should we pay our taxes? Well, look at what Jesus says here. Give to Caesar what is Caesar and give to God what is God. This must mean that we need to pay our taxes. I'm all about paying taxes, by the way. But this is not really what is at the heart of what Jesus is saying here. There's something much more. And he is bringing this out. The enemy is always wanting to entrap us. He wants to entrap you. But God will always reveal his kingdom purpose. The question is simple on the surface. Is it right to pay imperial taxes to Caesar or not? But it's designed to give kind of a no-win scenario. If Jesus says yes, he alienates the Jew followers. If he says no, he risks arrest from the Romans. It is like pick your poison, kind of what they do. Either choice will destroy you. And you know, this is the truth. Satan loves to offer you false choices, options that lead to both compromise, fear, and destruction. That's what Satan likes to do. He wants to put something before you that is no win. But God will never do that. Whatever is before us, God has a way for us to walk through. Paul writes that in 1 Corinthians 10:13, does he not? All temptation, no matter what temptation you face, he will always provide a way out. There is no temptation in which you cannot find your way out. The enemy came to trap Jesus, much like temptation, and he used it to reveal the kingdom. Jesus himself was tempted in every way, Hebrews 4:15 tells us. Yet he did not sin. So they say, is it right to pay imperial taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay or shouldn't we? When we feel cornered, and don't we? Think about your life. Do you not at times feel cornered? Maybe in relationships, at work, at school, in ministry, and you ask yourself, what is the kingdom's way forward? When we feel cornered, the question is what is the kingdom way forward? God has a way for us to move forward. The enemy comes to trap us, but God will move us forward. Don't accept the enemy's limited options. Let God reframe the situation. That's how traps become testimonies in our lives. When we can see God reframing our situation for us to move forward, away from the temptation. Paul in Colossians 3, 1 and 2 tells them that their hearts and their minds need to be set on things above and not on earthly things. When we don't keep the image stamped on us that we are God's, we will lose the narrative that God has for us. See, God's narrative is that there's Christ's rule has a reality. His narrative is there's always a way. But the earth's narrative is that God is absent from what is happening. So let me try to give you a bit of a graph here. I don't know. Can you see that? All right. If you can't, you can borrow my glasses. I did it as big as I could, but here we have the above and the earthly mindset. We have this Christ-ruled reality and God-absent reality. So when we look at identity, we've sang about that today. We are beloved. Our identity is we're beloved. We're secure. We're hidden with Christ. That is our true identity. That is what it means to look at above. But there are times that, I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel insecure about what people are thinking of me. You know, Corey, what is he really thinking of me right now? Like, why are you wearing a vest right now? Are you not warm enough? I thought, should I leave my vest on or not? What are people going to think about me? See, that's kind of looking at proved by performance, disability, and outcomes. But my identity of being loved, secure, and hidden with Christ, that's where I need to focus. Not on the fact of being proved by performance, visibility, and outcome. That's the world's way of looking at it. Or we look at desire. Do we have a desire for kingdom first, sufficiency in Christ? Is that my desire? Or is it scarcity, envy, grasping, never enough? See, that's what the world offers us. The world offers us and says, you never have enough. I mean, the richest people in the world, when you ask them, do you have enough? They tell you, oh, just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. Scarcity, envy, grasping, never enough. Or time. Do you see time as patience? You know, some people, why do we sit here quietly on a Sunday morning in prayer? Simply because I think what it does is it puts us into eternal time. It causes us to slow down. Eternal horizon. There is no time in eternity. You know, I continue to pray for Carol and her family because it is a loss. But do you know that Lowell stepped out of time and into eternity? That's where he is. Or time is urgency, hurry, FOMO, fear of missing out, fear of missing out. Yeah, it should be JOMO, joy of missing out. Or people, when we see Christ above, image bearers to love. But in the world, it's rivals and sources and resources and threats. I look at somebody and I say, oh, Luke, you're a resource for me. Now, how can I use Luke to my advantage? But in God's economy, it's like, no, Luke, you're an image bearer of God. What is he going to do with you? God, what do you want to do in my life that I could help Luke succeed in his life with Christ? He's not my rival. He's my brother. And then we have this practices, the practices of prayer and gratitude and Sabbath, of reading God's scripture. We do that because that's the things above. That brings us to this place, the upward, which changes the inward, which helps us on the outward. But when we look at the earthly side, it's comparison, right? I can look at some of you and I think right away, I think of Tom, why do you have so much hair? Like, I'd just like to have a little bit more hair than you. Right? Comparing. Complaint. You know, I complain about someone because that puts me above that person, right? When I complain about someone, it's putting me above them. That's the earthly way of thinking. Or self-promotion or overworked. Do you see where this is? Do you see how the enemy wants to bring us and live a God-absent narrative? And that's what is being presented to Jesus. Well, listen, what should I do? You know, what should we do, Jesus? Should we pay taxes to Caesar or not? That's here below. So let's look at what Jesus does as he takes this and he moves this to something much greater. So Jesus knew their hypocrisy. Why are you trying to trap me? He asked, bring me a denarius and let me look at it. And so they brought him a coin. And he asked, whose image is this and whose inscription? It's this image and ownership. Image and ownership. You bear the image of God. And I don't want us to forget that. You bear the image of God. So whoever bears someone's image belongs to them, right? We, as you know, just had our first grandchild. And she is, I'm calling her my button. She's just a small little thing, and I just call her my button. And I look at her and I think, who does she look like? Does she look more like a Jollymore, or does she look more like a Hemingway? Like, whose image does she bear? Oh, depends on whose eyes you're looking at through, right? But she's just a button of a little thing. Our ultimate allegiance is determined by whose image is stamped on our hearts. So Jesus asks, whose image? Referring to Caesar's coin. Its obvious answer is Caesar. His point? Caesar's image is on the coin. Give the coin to Caesar. But if God's image is on you, then give yourself to God. So he says, you're hypocrites. Because you say God's image is on you, but are you living that way or not? This is a kingdom confrontation. Jesus isn't dodging politics. He's unraveling a bigger reality. Earth rules claims can claim what bears their image, coins. So you can take money out right now out of your pocket, and what image does it bear? But God claims what bears his image. And that's you and me. The question beneath the question is allegiance. Whose image is on your heart? Jesus invites his listeners to live their entire lives under God's reign, right in the middle of a contested public space. So right where you are living, he's asking you to live under his reign and his rule. So there's this word, whose image? And this is a Greek word, the same Greek word that if you were to go to Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, and look in the Greek translation of that portion, so it's the Septuagint. If you were to look at the Greek portion of it, you would find it's the same Greek word that says we were created in the image of God. That's why when I look at people, I want to see them as image bearers of God. Whether they are following Jesus or not, they are still image bearers of God because they were created in his image. And so we were made in the image of God. Colossians 3:10 reminds us that we are being renewed in that image. So there's some image bearer people who just haven't been renewed yet, right? That's why we are doing what we are doing, and we've gone where we've gone, where we talked about what it looks like to be in and for and with your community. That's why we're taking a class, a course with Tim Clawson about how we can make disciples. Because I want to see people who have yet to understand their image bearers of God to become followers of Jesus, to live out that part of his, being his image bearers. I have two passports. I've got a passport from Canada, and I got a passport from the USA. Now, which passport do you think I travel on? Anyone? 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 Yes, thank you. Yes, I do. But I do take my U.S. passport with me because if I ever have to stop in the States, they want to see it. And I do. There is much about the country I was birthed in that I appreciate. There is. But this passport bears my image and carries with it, tells whoever looks at it, what country I belong to. So just as I have two passports, it says I was born, both of them tell me where I was born, which is the United States, but I'm a citizen of the United States, I'm a citizen of Canada. By birth, United States. By choice, Canada. By birth, I am a child of God. By choice, I am a child of God. That's my identity. And this is what is at the heart. So I would say to you and I, we could easily start our day by answering to God. He's phoning, right? So every time you look at your phone in the morning, the first thing you can say is, Father, I am yours. That's how we continue to make sure we're bearing his image, by just acknowledging, I am yours. So here's my last point, and this is to render or surrender. And so Jesus comes and he says, give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God. He moves from this point of understanding, what does it mean to give back what is due? Don't tip God. He's not saying here, just, you know, tip God. Just give him 10%, you know. You go to a restaurant and you know how you have to give a tip and you think, am I going to give a percentage of tip? Am I going to give a dollar amount? And I tip where I go, and then, you know, whatever all that has me, I'm not tipping God. I'm not saying, okay, God, here's my 10% of my life. I've come to church today, okay, and the pastor, do you realize it is 5 after and we still have to do communion? Yes, I do. Are you tipping God or are you living 100%? Jesus shifts from giving to give back. Caesar's minted coins, give it back to him. But if you are made in his image, then give your whole life to worship. Romans 12:1 says, present your bodies as a living sacrifice. Same thing. 1 Corinthians 6:19 to 20 tells us that we are not our own. And we go right back to Deuteronomy where God tells the people to love God with all your heart, all your lev, all your heart, your soul, and your strength. So God is not looking for us to give back to him a tithe of our life. He wants us to give him 100%. He's imprinted in our lives. There was a time when I wasn't doing what I'm doing right now. I was working at a grocery store. It wasn't my favorite job, but I was doing it because I needed to put money on the money in our bank account to feed our family, and so that's the job that was provided. And I remember going to work one day, and I was frustrated that I wasn't doing this. And I said, God, just open up the door for me to do ministry. What do you think God said to me? What do you think you're doing? And it's like, oh, yeah. My life is ministry. And so I began to go to work, and I began just to surrender it to God and say, God, my job today is to minister for you. And I think I told you that there wasn't too long, really, it wasn't too long after that, that my boss called me upstairs and said, Scott, I want to make you a personnel manager. See, I've always wanted a pastor in my grocery store to just minister to my staff. So I'm going to make you the personnel manager. My ministry was just living my life. Just living my life. So here is where I want to conclude, to move us to communion. The Pharisees and Herodians thought that they were asking Jesus about taxes, but Jesus turned it into a question about worship. Are you going to worship money, or are you going to worship God? Are you going to worship the world, or are you going to worship the one who created the world? And here's the truth. Every trial, trap, and temptation is ultimately a contest for your heart. The enemy will try to divide your loyalty between this world and the kingdom, but God invites us to give yourself wholly to him who bears your image. Jesus didn't just teach allegiance, he embodied it. He would soon stand before Rome and religion in silence and surrender and carry a cross. The one who bears the perfect image traded his life to restore our image. The king who owns us also redeemed us. We don't give our hearts to a tyrant. We give it to the one who first gave his. So I move us to the communion table. And I say to us, as we look at this, is ask yourself the question, what are you holding back? Are you holding anything back? What is it that you still need to surrender? Is it an attitude towards somebody? A hurt heart that needs God to touch and to heal? Is it your time which you could spend better? This isn't guilt. This is an invitation to surrender.